This week's Parsha is Parshas Lech Lecha, third class. And the title is, When Does Tough Love End and Abuse Begin? We're going to go to the videotape. And this is from a episode from Super Nanny. Okay, I don't know if anybody's seen Super Nanny, but if you haven't and you watch the show for a minute and a half, you'll know it's all
about. Is this the original British version or the American one?
This is her coming to America and doing her American interventions. Basically, Super Nanny, I think Jo Frost is her name, has been a professional nanny since she's been 18. And she's like, she comes in, and when parents have issues with discipline and scheduling, and they're basically being totally dominated by their young children, Super Nanny comes in and show them how it's done. And, of course, the show is all about, and then conflict ensues. So here we're going to go about that. All right, let's go to the videotape.
For JJ and Julia, and time for Mum to take a break. After 45 minutes, though, I was wondering whether JJ had fallen asleep.
Is JJ fast asleep now?
Yes, he sure is.
Why don't we go and check, make sure they're all right?
And unfortunately, JJ was wide awake.
JJ, come on, it's your nap time.
I wanted Mum to stick to the routine, but as JJ hadn't fallen asleep and nap time was nearly over, I suggested to her that he just rest and be in his room. But Mum was having none of it.
I'm going to let him sleep an hour when he goes to sleep.
Right, so then guess what happens to your routine?
My whole routine goes
correct.
Out the window.
Correct. You've gone past your routine and now everything is turned upside down.
I don't agree with you. No, I don't want him to sit in his room quietly. He needs to sleep. He cannot make it through the day being this tired. It's just, he can't. I mean, we're just aggravating the situation being in here.
I was trying to reason with Danielle, but she just shut down and refused to listen. If he falls asleep, by the time your hour's done... I find that disrespectful what you're doing right now.
Well, I find it torturing to him for no reason. Don't.
What, because he decided to stay?
Okay, listen, you are not going to tell Mommy or call Mommy a bad name. This is your warning. Do not call Mommy a bad name. And this is just what it's going to do, of course. It's just going to make him wild and crazy the whole day.
Yes, it is.
He was.
This is so obvious.
It's just going to make him crazy and all the timeouts and all that stuff. I mean, he needs a nap. If it was different, if he...
Excuse me, will you calm down?
Okay, but if...
No, not okay. I'm talking to you. And I find... Excuse me, I find that very disrespectful.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I really do. We're two adults
okay.
here.
But I find it disrespectful to him what we're doing right now, so I'm getting very upset.
Okay. To have someone come in and try to just totally change the way you live, it's just maddening. It was on.
I'm here trying to work with you. I'm not saying you have to agree with everything I'm saying.
Right.
I'm just asking you.
And now, of course, us talking here has woke her up.
Change is happening, and you either go with it or you fight it. And that's what I was seeing from Mum.
There are times that he will sleep. There are times that he won't sleep. There are times that he's quite happy in his room by himself playing, and that's wonderful. You need it more because you're the one who's overwhelmed and needs to get everything in place.
Okay, I disagree. We disagree.
Listen, as a parent, you will be burnt out if you don't honour the fact that you have to sometimes just sit down as well.
Right.
You know, just to be able to put your feet up and have a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, you're entitled to do it.
Right.
And that's
right.
Where you're at, and I acknowledge that. I think Mum's really realised that actually sticking to the routine is best. It allows her to have the breaks that are necessary so that she's rested and whatever the kids throw at her, she can deal with. When you're overwhelmed, the noise and everything else is too much. It's too
right.
much. And that's a really good indicator that the body needs to just take five.
It dawned on me what she was kind of getting at. You know, sometimes you really do need a relief or a break. I apologize for getting upset.
Sorry. No one thing. I'm here because I have the honor helping you in your home with your family and your children. And everything I do and say is because I care.
Right.
But the importance is
sticking with you when you're going through it, okay? Because I care.
Joe stepped on very shaky ground, but knowing that she was doing that in an attempt to help me, I really appreciated it.
All right. All right. There we have our Of course. What does this got to do with the Parsha? All right. Adrian's got the very cool virtual background there. What courthouse is that?
That is the Supreme Court of the United States.
There you go. We just got a new Supreme Court judge just the other day.
I have a better one, though. I just forgot to change it. This is my little Rambam.
There you go. Always good to invite the Rambam to the class. Although if that was really true, if he was really present, I'd be a little intimidated to give a shiur in his presence. Anyway, so, all right, here we go. Okay, what sorts of problems in a household requires help from Super Nanny? Start off everybody, we'll warm everybody up. Suzanne's got one.
Create peace in the home.
That's the goal, but what are the problems that she helps work through?
Like her own problems, not just her problems with her son.
What is a super nanny? What is a super nanny? That's the British woman. What's her job?
Try and help her have a better, just like a better situation for her, not just for her son.
Well, that's a specific case that we saw in the video. But what generally you can infer from the video is the problems that the super nanny comes to deal with. What are all the problems she comes to deal with?
Just let the kids run wild?
Well, it's either A, that the kids are out of control, and when the kids are out of control, the parent just feels completely overwhelmed and just can't function. You know what I mean? They're basically... And either the kids are not going to keep to a schedule. Either the kids are being aggressive to the parents, to the mom. Either the parents are not listening to the rules in order how to implement, or basically how to raise kids and all the child rearing problems that all parents have to navigate. So the whole essence of the show is that parents who have extreme problems, their kids are not responding to. The kids are driving them crazy. That gets into a cycle. They're yelling at the kids and they're acting, then the parents themselves are acting out because of the kids. And then the kids are then act out more. And then basically you have a living hell under a roof. You want to kill yourself, or likely you want to kill your child. Okay. Cause you don't have any skills, techniques, and methodology to raise these kids. So, and they're not going to raise themselves. Now, who has more expertise in child raising, parents or super nanny? It was an easy question. Easy question, guys. All right, Shayna, start off with the easy. This is the single.
I'm going to go with the super nanny to the extent that it also depends on the number of kids that the parents have. If it's a parent's first kid, they have no child rearing experience other than what they're currently going through.
Okay, good.
A nanny, while they're not a parent, has probably had multiple families over however many years they've been working, as long as it's not their first family.
Right. So the super nanny, she has been raised. She's been doing this for 20 years. So she actually is an expert. She actually also wrote 6 books about this. So she's an expert in child rearing and how to run a home properly. And so she's going to be way better than the parent, because the parents only had 1 or 2 or 3 kids in the very show. Now, here's a little bit of a question. Who knows the parent children better? Suzanne?
Well, this is bringing me back to when I did community mental health, and I would walk right into that scenario.
Yes.
And, the parents, the caregivers, I should say, really think they know, but you start to see the pattern that's going on, and in trying to show them what's going on,
right,
is tough, and especially get a question like, "Do you have kids?" and
was really underlying that question was, can you help me? Like, do you know what you're doing?
And right.
Because they really do think, well, I know my kid. I know.
Right. So in what way does the parent know their kid? In what way do they not know their kid? In contrast to the super nanny. Now, the super nanny is coming in for a two-week stint. Doesn't know the child, not been with the child for the last first 4 years of his life, so doesn't know the child in that sense. In what way does the super nanny know the child better than the parent does? In what way does the parent know the child more than the super nanny does?
Well, the parent, I don't know if this is getting it, but the parent knows what's going to stop the behavior temporarily. But in the long run,
by the way, maybe, right, in other words, They have used their parenting skills, good, bad, or whatever they got. So they might know some of the idiosyncratic elements of the child. So they know the child insofar as the, you know, the aspects of its personality, because they've been raising the child as best they can. But the super nanny who has a strategy, who has principles, in a certain, and sees the application living, you know, sees what this kid is. Oh, this is a child. This is the oppositional child of this kind, and they will resonate with, you know, these four strategies or these four tactics. In a certain sense, the super nanny knows the child in a certain sense better because they have a categorical knowledge of, you know, a child rearing. You know what I'm saying? They might be more. They might. So that's why. That's why Danielle in the video, she was arguing. All right, we'll get to that in a moment. Okay, who is responsible for the ultimate decisions in child raising, parents or super nanny?
Parent. All the nanny can do is advise.
Correct. Now, who's better qualified to make these decisions?
I would go with what Janet said, the nanny, because she's got the 20 years, right?
So she's got, okay, Elise, as a mother of little Joshy, what do you feel about this topic?
Sorry, I came in a little bit late.
So we're referencing Super Nanny, which is a reality show. You know the show?
Yes, I do.
All right, so she's the parenting guru. She's brought into tough circumstances. She came on in because the mom was going crazy and didn't know how to deal with her little kid. Obviously the parents are ultimately responsible to make decisions. That's their kid.
Right.
True. But who's better qualified to make these decisions?
I think the nanny is very good. I have a lot of respect for years of experience and knowing a broad range of, the nanny knows a broad range of children and behaviors and... I think the parent kind of just knows in isolation, this is what my kid's doing, but the nanny is a good person as far as strategies that the parent might not know, no matter how well the parent knows their child.
Correct.
So,
also, in a certain sense, being that the nanny is a little bit more emotionally distant, can be more objective. When you have your own kid, it's your own kid. You have all kinds of feelings about your kid, and you're not going to necessarily, you know, you hear the kid crying, like, you know, he's not happy. Now as you become knowledgeable, what different cries from a child means different things, and if you have years of experience, you can discern that. Now, I've started off those are easy softball questions. Let me amp it up a little bit. Would a live-in nanny be better qualified to make decisions about child raising than the biological parents?
A live-in nanny? I would say yes, because odds are that parent is either, or those parents are probably not going to be home or not home all day, and the nanny is going to be spending a whole lot more time with the kid than the parents are.
Right. Typically, like in Manhattan, presently and until recently, very common that a couple who are working parents who leave the house at 8 o'clock, and the nanny will be there at 7:30 for the transition and taking care of little Teddy. And will be there until the parents return at 6, until a parent returns, whoever shows up first, at 6 p.m. So meanwhile, the nanny spending 10 hours a day with the kid, oftentimes 6 days a week, you know, year in, year out, the parents have the kid, typically it's dinner, bath, change, pajamas, story, boom, out. Because they're exhausted. They have, like, no patience for a kid because they've had a rough day working for the man. So they have a very slender picture of the child. They might have one full day of taking care of the child individually, which for them might become, you know, very difficult because they don't ever do it. So Shayna weighs in on the politically incorrect idea that the live-in parent, live-in nanny is way better, more qualified than mom and dad to make decisions about the kid because they intimately know the child. Okay, which gets us to our next question. We had Danielle, the argument, we had Danielle, the mom, insisted that her little son, I don't know what his son's name, Andrew, I forgot what his name was, Andrew, that he, even though that he's been sitting in his room for the last 45 minutes, he's not falling asleep, playing around in his bed, still should be put down for a full hour of sleep. Why? Because he's a cranky maniac if he doesn't get the hour of sleep. While the nanny said, au contraire, you're trying to put the kid on a schedule, you give him an hour of sleep, your whole schedule's messed up, and your day will explode in pain. Okay, and then what did Danielle? She was very angry, and she rebuked the super nanny. Was she right in rebuking super nanny? Was she right in rebuking super nanny? Let's go to the.
I think like she was just getting a little defensive.
Well, she wasn't. She wasn't being defensive. She just says, "You're wrong." She was insisting. Well, wrong was that. Hold on. Let me get the right. Let me get the. Bear with me for a second. Here we go. She was. you know, she was. She said she went up under a grill and was said, "No, you're wrong. Little Andrew needs his hour of sleep." And did she rebuke Super Nanny in a respectful way?
She got very defensive.
Right.
She felt insulted, so she kind of threw it right back.
Yes, she did. She says, look, we're adults here. I don't like being spoken in that fashion. And because basically the mother's at wit's end, so she lost her, you know. And the bottom line is, entitlement to speak aggressively to Super Nanny? Look for a psychological angle. Why did she get up in her grill and say, "No, you're wrong. Well, Andrew's got to sleep." What was the rationale that allowed her to do that, to be aggressive like that?
I think she just got very defensive because she's the parents. It's her child, and she's thinking she knows best.
Right. And what is Super Nanny? What is the key word in Super Nanny?
Super.
She was ignoring the super part, and she was going, "You're the nanny. You're the hired help. I'm the boss. You listen to me." Okay. She, you know, became a employer-employee superior subordinate tension. You know what I'm saying? Now, even though that one second you got two little kids, you're calling Super Nanny because you're basically admitting that you don't know what you're doing. Okay, so why are you telling Super Nanny that she's wrong when you hired her to do a parenting makeover of your disaster at your home, which you're going crazy? You know, of course, the movie, the show always starts from, they'll have the B-roll clip of the kid, the parent going like, ah, can't take it, you know what I mean? All right. All reality shows are the exact same formula. You have to have, well, let's start off with the conflict. Danielle, a mother of two wonderful children, is simply overwhelmed. And you see the kids basically jumping on her head, whatever. And then, but still, she's a parent, as Elise said. She's got to know better. And then she asserted her dominion as being, I'm the boss. I'm bringing you in. You listen to me. You know, my castle, my rules. So that was her. That was going. All right. We're doing this because in this parsha, Parsha's Lech Lecha, is action-packed. We have the story of Avram and his wife Sarai. Will ultimately become Sarah. Many adventures in this parsha. This parsha is got full of stuff. So, but we've done some of the other stories because this is the sixth cycle of the parsha class. So I got to pick new material. So I'm just moving on every year a little to the next part of the parsha that we didn't do last time. So if you want to hear the earlier parts of the parsha, I recommend checking up on YU Torah, all the other class, some other classes. So here we go. Let's go to this parsha. All right, this is an intense little story. Let's have Elise read it out.
Okay. Birth of Ishmael. Avram's wife, Sarah, had not borne him any children. She had an
Hold on. Read that word. Avram's wife, what's her name?
Sarai.
That's her. Right. She first started off with Sarai. No, by the way, notice it's Avram and Sarai. They will all become Avraham and Sarah. They all get a name change later on.
Okay. Avram's wife Sarai had not borne him any children. She had an Egyptian slave girl by the name of Hagar. How do you pronounce that again?
Hagar.
Sarai said to Avram, God has kept me from having children. Come to my slave and hopefully I will be built up, have sons through her. Avram heeded Sarai.
All right, stop right there. Hold on. Let's listen. What? So Sarai is telling Avram to do what? Make sure. What is Sarai asking Avram to do?
To have a child with another woman.
Yeah, like to marry or to have, basically to have children with her slave girl. And what does it mean that I will be built up, I will be built up or have sons through her? What do you think that means? It can mean a couple of things. What do you guys think? Adrian, what does that mean?
I'm spacing out a bit. Can you ask me the question again, please?
When Sarai tells Avram to take Hagar, her maidservant, and to have children, and hopefully I'll be come to my wife, slave, and hopefully I'll be built up and have sons through her. What does it mean that I'll be built up through her? What is she thinking?
Well, I mean the literal interpretation of be built up, I would imagine to mean, have my legacy spread or build up her legacy in the sense that she will sort of be the foster mom of these children. I guess this is like the equivalent of the present day fertilization sort of arrangement.
Right. There's a surrogate mom. And then there's a mom that's going to raise the child. So it says basically Hagar will have the child and I'll raise it. Correct. It's one possibility. Another possibility is that, which is oftentimes happens, is that people adopt children because they cannot have children. And then, I don't know how that really works, but it somehow, it allows them, then they themselves have children afterwards where they could not. I don't know if it's stimulative. I don't know what the psychological mechanism is, but it's not uncommon that people who adopt children because they can have children, and then they have their own. They end up having their own biological child, anyways, after they've adopted a child. I don't know what the cause. I don't know what the causal mechanism is. So either one of the two possibilities. All right, at least keep on going.
After Adam had lived in Canaan for 10 years, his wife Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her slave, and gave her to her husband Abram as a wife. Abram came to her, and she conceived. When she realized that she was pregnant, she looked at her mistress with contempt. Sarai said to Abram, "It's all your fault. I myself placed my slave in your arms. Now that she sees herself pregnant, she looks at me with disrespect. Let Hashem judge between me and you." Abram replied to Sarai, "Your slave is in your hands. Do with her as you see fit." Sarai afflicted her, and Hagar ran away from her. An angel of God encouraged her by a spring. An angel of God encountered her by a spring in the desert, in the oasis on the road to Shur. The angel said, "Hagar, maid of Sarai, from where are you coming and where are you going?" "I am running away from my mistress, Sarai," she replied. The angel of God said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit yourself to her." Another angel said in God's name, "I will grant you many descendants. They will be so many that they will be beyond count." Still another angel of God said to her, "You are pregnant, and you will give birth to a son. You must name him Ishmael, for God has heard your affliction."
Okay, what is it? Quick.
Why were the Gentiles of Tarshish easy to repent?
I can't do that right now. So there's a lot going on in the story, and a lot of questions here.
Would it be possible to get the Hebrew of this?
Yeah, check. Go on to safaria.org. Okay, Aviva.
Guys, you're doing great. Indeed. Love you guys. Have a great night. Lots of wisdom.
All right. All right, good times. So check out, that's at Safaria chapter 16 in Genesis. All right, couple questions here, a lot of questions. All right, so here's a question, I'm going to frame it out. In this conflict, who is the authority decision maker, i.e. the Danielle character, and who is the subordinate, i.e. the super nanny?
The slave, and then...
Who's the slave's name, Scott?
Hagar
is correct. Good. And who is the Danielle character? Who's the authority decision maker?
Avram.
Nope.
What's her name?
Right there.
Sarai.
Avram's wife. Correct. Okay. So we have Hagar, who is, now she's pregnant, okay? She's the Danielle character, you know, she's a super nanny, as it were. And we have the authority, which is all right. Now, next question. Did Hagar accept her role as a subordinate? Was she right or wrong? In other words, basically, she became pregnant, and she became contemptuous of her boss, i.e. Sarai, and Sarai got angry at Avram. What's going on here? You didn't rebuke her, and he says, "Look, you're a slave. Do what you want." And then she afflicted her. Now, obviously, we have to figure out what does she mean that he afflicted. First of all, what do you think it meant that she afflicted her? How do you afflict a slave? What are the kind of things do you think that Sarai did? What do you think happened?
Was cruel to her?
Yeah, give me some examples.
Things to her?
What are kinds of things you can do to a slave or to a nanny that make their life miserable?
Do like work that might be harder than
right. Give them very hard jobs. Make them work very long hours. Make them, degrading kinds of work. You know what I mean? Basically, it's very, if somebody's a cleaning lady or a nanny, it's very easy to make things very miserable for them. You know, because their job as it is difficult. So it got to the point, and also you could do what? You could yell at them. You could say they're doing a bad job. You know what I'm saying? You could be verbally abusive, right? So whatever it was, so what did Hagar do?
Also, in biblical times, it could have been physical abuse as well.
It could be, right. So she's a slave. So there's no laws against it. You know, maybe it doesn't say. It just says that she afflicted her. So what did Hagar do, Sarah? So what did Hagar do?
I don't know.
She ran away.
Okay.
She says, she said, I ain't taking this. And she zipped out. And then we have this very interesting encounter that God dispatches an angel, which is another question, like, okay. And he says, Hagar, maid of Sarai, where are you going? Where are you coming? Where are you going? And she says, I'm running away from my boss, my mistress Sarai. And what does the angel says? Return to your mistress and submit to her. Okay? So that's very interesting.
I just have a question. Has she given birth yet, or she's still pregnant at this point?
Seemingly she's still pregnant.
Because what I'm not understanding is why would you want to cause any harm or, you know, she's supposed to have the baby that Sarai is going to be raising as her own, so why would she cause her, you know, like if she gave, like we were talking about giving her more work or you know, treating her badly, wouldn't you want, because she's carrying the baby that's going to be, you know, Sarai and Abram's future child, so why would
she... Tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it's that Sarah is supposed to raise her as her own. She's saying, have a son with my slave in order to make my husband better, but I don't think she's
says, come to my slave and hopefully I will be built up. I have son through her. So she is speaking that she is going to be, it's going to quote unquote count for her. You know what I'm saying? She's looking at it as it being either.
It won't be her child.
Well, it'll be like what Adrian had a nice way of, in a contemporary sense, saying it's like nowadays people who can't carry a child, they will hire a surrogate mother who will literally carry the child for 9 months. And after birth, the child gets deposited in the home of the mother.
But that would be that it's her child then at that point, right?
So
versus difference, right, with Joseph, whereas even like his concubines, right, had their own children, right? So
I mean, Jacob.
That Hagar raises it, or that Sarah is going to raise it.
Well, so one of the possibilities I'll be built up and have sons through is either A, this will quote unquote count for me because it'll be my adoptive child. I'll raise up. I'll be built up. This will be my child, essentially. It's one possibility. Or two, another possibility that the commentators give is that it will cause me, by raising this child, that I will be either merit a child of my own, or it will be psychologically facilitate me having a child. You know what I'm saying? Which is, sometimes it occurs that adoptive parents who can't have children adopt a child and then, for whatever reason, get their own child. But, so then, the question...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is there maybe another interpretation of the way Sarai treated Hagar? Because wasn't Sarai like a woman of valor? She was a kind...
Right. Right. I'm really asking that question the other way. Did Hagar accept her role as subordinate? Was she right or was she wrong? So that question really brings out both issues.
I mean, also a woman of valor, no matter how valor we want to say, how amazing a Sadiqa she is, you start messing with fertility and women can be all kinds of different. I mean, she might have resentment still, even though you say, I want, you know, you to have a child for my husband, when that child starts growing, could be a different kind of emotional situation.
Right. Obviously, the fact that Hagar, once she becomes pregnant, looks at her boss, Sarai. Well, let me ask you the question. Well, let's ask this question. Let's go back a step. When she realized that she was pregnant, she looked at her mistress with contempt. Why did she do that? In other words, she has a child. She's now pregnant with Avram's child. Great. What does it got to do with her feelings toward her Sarai, her boss?
The pasuk is silent. It doesn't say anything.
But that's called learning. You have to put forth a good theory. Why do you think she started looking at Sarai contemptuously?
Because she was able to have the child and Sarah's not, right?
Okay, so therefore what?
So she's saying she's better.
She's jealous.
Right. You're supposed to create this great nation. You've been married for 10 years. Ain't nothing going on. I show up, bing, bang, boom, pregnant, hello. Who's a better woman? That would be me. So, she's looking at the fact that she got so pregnant rather so quickly as a proof, and why am I being the slave? Why am I the loser? You wash your own damn dishes. I'm done washing the dishes. I am building the Jewish people. I'm busy. Okay? So what happened when she became pregnant, her sense of personal dignity and self-worth and entitlement just simply began to balloon.
We had a class on this where you began with the video of like the luxurious homes around the world.
Right. Well, that's the entitlement that wealthy people feel. She's wealthy in a different way. You're trying to have a kid. Oh, so if God didn't give you a kid but gave me a kid, what does that mean? I'm better than you. A win for me, a loss for you. So therefore, she could not take. In other words, at that point, psychologically, she could not take the role that before she was comfortable being. She was a slave woman before, but now she's playing such an important role. She has a sense of dignity and significance and importance, and she can't look at Sarai as being significant. What are you talking about? Your mission is to be with your husband and build the Jewish people. What's happening? Nothing. I show up, boom. Kid time. Who's better than who? I ain't doing your laundry. So the question, of course, is was Sarai right about? Was Hagar right to do that or to feel that and to express that? What do you think? Is she making a correct deduction by her becoming pregnant with Avram's baby? Does that prove that she is superior to Sarai? What do you think? What do you think?
I think no. I mean, I guess I'm just looking at it from a point of like some people get pregnant easier than others, and I don't think one, you know, because Sarai was having trouble and Hagar got pregnant so easily that it, you know, makes, you know, Hagar, you know, oh my gosh, she should be held up so much higher than Sarai.
Correct.
If we judge people by their ability to be fertile, we'd have some problems, right?
Right. So her inference to the fact that, in other words, she's looking at, or maybe she's a younger woman, let's say, for, you know, or she's just, there are women who are more fertile that readily become pregnant, and there are women that it's a greater difficulty. And it's not something that you can, it's not something that you can train for. it's not like being an athlete. An athlete, you know, your personal training has a thing. Some people, women are born more fertile. Some people are born less fertile. It's got nothing to do with you. You just got the lucky, you know, you won the ovarian lottery. You're a winner. Okay? So so she's making the wrong, and Sarai, as we learned from the earlier part of the Parsha, is Avram's partner. She is there in Avram's mission of educating the world about Hashem. She's a great educator. She's a great leader. And Hagar is an Egyptian slave woman, you know, coming from a pagan background. Her claims for greatness are a little bit, shall we say, premature. So what Elise is saying, that her acting contemptuously to Sarai was wrong. Now, Sarai does not get initially angry at Hagar. He gets angry at Avram. Why? What was her expectation that her husband would do? Shana, what was Sarai's expectation that that Avram would do?
That he would turn her down for the offer.
Well, no, I'm talking about after they get pregnant. When Sarai says to Avram, it's all your fault. I placed my slave in your arms. Now that she sees herself pregnant, she looks at me with disrespect. Like God judge between me and you. So what was her expectation for Avram to do?
Oh, to deal with her himself.
Yeah. He should say, Hagar, relax. A big milestone on the pregnancy. We're all excited. Now, could you wash the dishes? Okay. So, you know,
can I make a comment here?
Yes. Adrian Bavakasha with a comment.
It says, can you scroll up?
Yeah.
Where it says, let God judge between me and you.
Yes.
The Gemara says that Sarah died before Abraham for saying this.
Okay, so that's a criticism of her. Okay, so that's the next level of that's, you know, Avram, by the way, but you don't see Avram, by the way, what does Avram say? He doesn't say that you're wrong. He says, Sister, Bavakasha, you're a slave. You do what you want. So he's not arguing with her. So that seems to be on the plain shot. Forget about the Gemara's shot. On the plain shot, he's agreeing with her. He says, look, she's your slave. You deal with her. Okay? So it doesn't seem that he didn't say, what do you mean I should deal with her? Or is there's no... Avram is not criticizing her.
I just want to make the point that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, it says that when you say to someone that God judge, you know, sort of like, you know, God will like when someone wrongs you and you say like, oh, God will punish this person or let karma will bite them in the butt. The Gemara says that when you do that, it causes the heavens to judge you as well, and that rather than doing that, you should sort of resolve the problem by going to a Jewish court or something like that.
Right. So yes, the Gemara is touching upon the fact that she's rather using using super harsh language. Okay? She's indicting Avram rather harshly that he didn't take care of this. Okay, so the Gemara is touching upon that. But on the plain thing, even if she's using excessive language, she's very upset, right? She's upset. Avram is not saying, "Well, you're wrong." He doesn't chastise her. She says, "No, you're right. Here's your slave. Your slave. You take care of it." Go ahead, Scott Shapiro.
Should have been like, she's getting this like amazing gift from her slave, like, you know, this baby that she's going to raise to be the future of the Jewish people, but she can't get past, like...
That's a very good question, Scott. No, but Scott's question is, why is Sarah should let it go?
Right.
Hagar is delivering the goods, as it were, delivering the baby, right? She's bringing the baby to the family. Okay, so she's acting arrogantly, contemptuously.
Could have been like a little bit nicer to her, you know, this gift that she's giving.
Right, so take the other approach. Instead of doubling down, double nice.
Right.
Okay, that's a good question. That actually, that gets to question really 8. Does Sarai rebuke Hagar in a respectful way? Obviously not. Is Sarai correct in her choice of rebuke? Scott Shapiro is saying, I don't think so. Didn't seem to work out so well.
No.
Okay. But what evidence do you have? There's two conflicting evidences. Do I have that question later on? I forgot if I do or not. Oh, we're good. Oh, I got a hustle here. Yeah, so we're going to get to the questions. All right. So this question about whether Hagar, where Sarai did the right thing is a debate among the commentators. We have the Radak and we have the Sworno. So let's have Suzanne Bavakshah read us the Radak. You're on.
I shall be built up the son from this union would be called
Avna? I shall be built up.
I shall be built up. All children are a building consisting of genetic input by father and mother. Sarai said that any son from this union with her husband would be accepted by her as if he were part of her biological family. She would treat him as her own son.
All right, so that was said at Adrian's point, that basically she's going to treat the child, even though it's not her genetic material, her adopted son, and she would raise it. Next. So Avram listened to her plan.
Avram listened. He agreed with Sarai's plan, preferring not to wait any longer for God to fulfill his promise in giving him children from Sarai, as he had understood this promise up until now. He decided that since Sarai had stopped menstruating, she would not be able to become pregnant. As a result, he reasoned that God's promise to him was to be fulfilled via Hagar, who would become the mother of any children of his. Seeing that even Sarai had arrived as such an interpretation of God's promise, he had no reason to disagree with her.
Right, because basically, you see from this approach that when God promises you something, it doesn't mean that it's automatically like a poof. All right, so in other words, you don't know how Hashem's going to deliver on the promise. The initial promise was, oh, we're going to become a great nation. That means that I and my wife will have a child, possibly number one. But now she stopped menstruating, so she can't have children. So therefore, what are we going to do? So Sarai thought, I guess it'll be through a surrogate. And that's why they came up with the Hagar plan. All right, keep on going.
She looked at her mistress with contempt. She thought that now that it was clear that Avram's seed would be from her, she would become the top-ranking wife of Avram. As a result, she refused to carry out instructions given to her by Sarai.
Okay, so bottom line is, so she says, look, you know, because it says that he married her, but she was a lower-level wife. You know what I'm saying? Like what they call a pilegish, like a concubine-level wife. You know what I'm saying? So she said, well, 1 second. My ranking, my Yelp ranking just moved up a couple of notches over here because somebody's there not having any kids and somebody's there is fulfilling God's promise for the Jewish people. So based upon that, I should be the top dog. All right. What does he go on? Here we go. So now Sarai's move. Go on.
And she afflicted her, Sarai, overburdened her with work, and made her perform the work in an intolerably harsh manner. It is even possible that the word vitana,
and she afflicted her,
includes physical as well as verbal abuse of a hag.
Oh, that was Sarah's point. Sarah, she basically gave a little potch. She says, you know, you got to be, I don't like the way you're working. Boom! Okay, she said it's a possibility. In other words, that is a linguistic possibility of the word. Go on.
The Torah testifies that Sarai did not act piously towards her, although Avram had given her a free hand when he said, "Do to her as appears fit in your eyes." From a moral point of view, she should have treated Hagar in a manner befitting her status as a wife or legal companion of Avram. From the point of view of practicing human kindness, although Avram had given her a free hand when he said, "Do to her as appears fit in your eyes," from a moral point of view, she should have treated Hagar in a manner befitting her status as a wife or a legal companion of Avram.
Go on.
From the point of view of practicing human kindness, she should have treated a subordinate with all possible consideration. the scholar Ibn Gabirol said, how beautiful is the attribute of practicing and forgiveness in circumstances when this is possible. Sarai's actions, as reported, were not pleasing in the eyes of the Lord. This is reflected in the words of the angel to Hagar. For the Lord has listened to the oppression you have endured.
Ah, so the fact that, go on.
This is why the angel gave her a blessing as compensation for the harsh treatment she had suffered. Avram did not prevent Sarai from acting as she did, even though it was displeasing in his eyes, because he was concerned primarily with eyes.
That's a mistake. He was concerned primarily with preserving the relationship with Sarai.
The reason why this whole story is preserved for all future generations in our chapter is to teach moral ethical lessons and to warn us not to indulge in injustice.
Right. So the Haggah. So according to Radak, what we're supposed to learn about, what we're supposed to learn about from the story, is how now not to treat a subordinate. In other words,
basically, Abraham said to her, "Do as you see fit." Right? I'm putting it in your hands.
Right.
And it was up to her to say, "I'm not going to be a bad person about this." Right.
Right.
So she's the one who then chose to take that power and not use it wisely.
Right. Not to act in an appropriate fashion. In other words, even though technically, legally, it's her slave, she could do that, technically, legally, but it's a lack of chesed or it's not appropriate.
It's a lack of also just
justice.
General kindness. I mean, but I understand where someone else was coming about her being the Sadekis, right? She's supposed to be Sarah, the great,
the matriarch.
Right, but she, I think what sometimes we have this conflict with when reading these things, right, is between this idea, this idealized version of these biblical characters, right, and the idea that they're actually human.
Right, so you see here, so the Radak is taking the perspective of the, just the opposite. What we learn about a tzaddikus is that a tzaddikus does not mean that they're batting 1,000. They will sometimes become overwhelmed by their emotions and fail. And this is a case in point. So Radak had given her an F on the old, on the report card over here. And we're learning this because this is telling you, and he says, what's the proof? The angel says, you're going to call your child Yishmael? Because God has heard you. God has heard your oppression. Because you've been oppressed. So it means that basically it's a compensation for that you've been unjustly treated. Now, there was a one line that supports the opposite position of the story. Okay? Let me go to the Sforno that brings the other position. Go ahead. Suzanne, keep on rolling here.
Your maidservant is in your hands, for she has not been given her freedom by you who are her mistress.
Right, she's your property. Go on.
And she afflicted her Sarai's objective in maltreating Hagar was to remind her of the fact that she remained her slave. She was not to insult her mistress anymore. She meant to make clear that any Gentile who insults Israelites will experience similar harsh treatment. Compare Isaiah 60:14, all those who reviled you shall prostrate themselves at your Israel feet.
Okay, so the Sforno, taking the other position, saying, time for a little tough love. Sometimes people need to know what their appropriate station in life is. And Hagar was wrong to believe that she was becoming a true equal wife, and the fact that she was a slave. So he's supporting that it was correct. Now, I want to point out, I'll give you guys 60 seconds from verse 9 through 11, What part? There's one puzzle that supports the Radak, and there's one puzzle that supports the Sforno. Go ahead, go. What Pasuk supports the Sforno? That it was correct in her oppression or her affliction?
The first one, 16:9. Like, go back and submit yourself?
Yeah, go back and take it.
I have a quick question.
So, hold on one second. I'm gonna Sforno. Let me unpack that. That means like this. It says, look, that she's saying essentially you were wrong to act arrogantly and blow off that you don't want to be a slave anymore. And the truth is, to be a slave of Sarai and Abram is a great thing, but you don't get to choose that. You don't get to be a slave. I mean, that's the deal, you know, certainly in that time. So it's better for you to be a slave. And as Rashi brings up, which is her original thought, better for you to be a slave in Abram and Sarah's house than be a princess in Paro's house. There's a Medrash that says that Sarah, that Hagar was actually a princess in Avram's house. Was Paro's daughter. That's a Midrashic point. I don't mean that literally. But the bottom line is, sometimes you got to, you know, sometimes taking rebuke, you got to accept it. So we have a debate here. Now, what supports the Radak side? What verse? Yeah, you're right. So therefore, that's not seeming to be a winning endorsement. So we have the Torah is, which is not uncommon, ambiguous, unclear. Okay? So both readings can be read, both positions we can. So Scott, you had a question. Back to you.
Was she really trying to be on par with Sarah? Or was she just asking, you know?
Not on par, according to the way the Radak viewed it, is that I'm a wife, I got the kid, I should be number one.
But it's like, you know, you like to get respect, you have to give respect. You know what I mean?
But again, she was feeling that as everybody in the class said that she felt when she became pregnant, her sense of self soared. You know what I'm saying? She felt unbelievable. And she also, being in Avram's house, she knew about that there's not a couple trying to have a baby. This is a couple who are starting a nation. And guess who gets to start a nation? That would be me. Okay? So it's not this is not a story of a couple trying to have a kid. This is a couple starting to beginning a civilization. And Hagar knew that. So therefore, she felt like, you know, I'm the main chapter of Jewish history. This is awesome. Okay? So what is the debate between Radak and Sforno concerning Sarai's handling of Hagar's contemptuous behavior? What is the debate hinging upon?
Well, for me, it's the lack of evidence towards what we're saying is the affliction, right? Which is, are we talking about, like, was she physically beaten, or was she told, like, you know, please respect me within my house, and decided that that was too much and ran away, right? Overreacting, or if it was that Sarai actually was being being an unkind human.
Right. Was it tough love, or was it abuse?
Right.
Now, what's the debate about, so Sarai's either trying to put here's the super nanny, you know, becoming, you know, a little bit too big for the britches and has to be put down to their appropriate place. Really Sarai's wrong and she's just flying off. She's basically getting angry and she's becoming humiliated and becoming unjust from an act because she is angry and she's feeling humiliated. You know what I'm saying? Look at us.
I think there's a third possibility.
Go ahead.
which is not just the way that she treated abuse versus tough love, but that her emotional reaction in the first place wasn't correct. You know, her sense of entitlement, like, who is this woman that, like, I've been, you know, waiting for this my whole life, and, like, this lady, she's fertile, and she has a son, and like, we have that in life a lot. You know, people get lucky, they win the lottery, they get, like, and then other people resent them because, oh, I've been working twice as hard, why do they deserve the promotion? It's just a general theme in life that, you know, some people, you know, despite another person working harder, they just get a better result.
You're saying that really it had nothing to do with Hagar acting mm-hmm. arrogantly. It had to do, and taking the superior position in the household as woman number one, as you know, the issue was having Hagar around made her feel inadequate that she's now a loser.
Hagar was number one at that point. Sarai didn't know that.
Well, first of all, by the way, does Avram agree with that?
Well, obviously not if he told Sarah to do with her as you wish.
He says, but look at the first phrase, your slave is in your hands. Do with her as you see fit. He's not viewing her as a wife in the classic sense.
He's not condoning it. He's acquiescing.
No, but I'm just saying, but he's not seeing her as a wife.
Well, no, but if we take it back also to the analogy, right, of a surrogate, right?
Yeah.
So take it back there. Your wife or the person carrying the child, right, you're going to choose your wife.
Yes.
And so I think that's kind of what...
So you could say, is Avram being the weak husband just... is he just being the guy who's wimping out and just listening to, you know, just getting his dealing with an angry wife and caving? Is that what, in other words, she's angry about the situation, like, you know, you deal with it. I don't want to deal with that. Is that what's happening?
I mean, that's in the Bible, though, throughout it, right? You're dealing with the fact that the wives are the ones who handle anything that are happening in the women's tent, right? And so that's not the man's prerogative, right? So I don't necessarily think that. I think he's just saying for the time period, like, this is your purview, right? This is not on me.
Okay.
Do I think it's the correct action? Not necessarily.
That's a good question. Why doesn't Avram, which is an unanswered question, is why doesn't Avram sit Hagar down and say, look, Hagar, you know, we're all grateful that you're having this child, but you're still playing the role, part of your role and responsibility in the household is still to be the maidservant. That's just your thing. That did not change, you know. But he's giving that to, as you're saying, that's giving it to Sarai. So according to the Radak, why does Sarai act improperly? Because either she's angry, or she's angry, insulted, and therefore she's lashing out. But in other words, the question is Sarai acting out of anger, and that's why she's acting unjustly, or in a thoughtful manner, this person is acting improperly, and they have to put them back in line. Like the nanny has to deal with the crazy kid who wants to do what they, you know, does not want to submit to any rules, and has to give them a timeout, even though they don't want to. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think what's confusing about it is that sometimes people have legitimate grounds to sort of rebuke another person, but their motives aren't necessarily pure. The motives might be out of jealousy, the motives might be, and they just then find a rationalization, like, oh, but she should be put in place. And then it's just really, you know, scapegoat.
Right. That's what the Radak and others are really saying. In other words, she could have handled the situation of, you know, clarifying that Sarai still has the major role to play here, and you're just stepping out of your boundary and not without by, you know, doubling down on her workload. You know what I'm saying? There could have been other way of...
I think he's also saying, you know, in life, right, there are people that are always going to be less fortunate than you.
Yes.
Because they have something that you don't doesn't mean necessarily that that situation has changed.
Right.
So just to have kindness for those, you know, that are beneath you, whether or not it's easy.
Correct. This, by the way, is a very, I think everybody's going to have this challenge. Everybody here or likely will have people that you'll have a housekeeper, a gardener, a nanny. You might have employees that answer to you, and you are in a position of power. And you can, and the ideal way, as mentioned, is to be compassionate, even though that you are in control. Okay, so just to bring it home to our situation, I'm just going to read, this is too long. The Ram is going to summarize quickly. The Ram brings out there are two character traits that you have to go to the extreme. One is arrogance, and the other one is anger, i.e. to not being angry. Okay, so let me have Sarah read it out. Anger.
Anger is also an exceptionally bad quality. It is fitting and proper that one move away from it and adopt the opposite extreme. He should school himself not to become angry, even when it is fitting to be angry. If he should wish to arouse fear in his children and household or within the community, if he is a communal leader and wishes to be angry at them to motivate them to return to the proper path, he should present an angry front to them to punish them, but he should be inwardly calm. He should be like one who acts out the part of an angry man in his wrath, but is not himself angry.
Go on.
Yeah. Okay. The early sages said, anyone who becomes angry is like one who worships idols. They also said, whenever one becomes angry, if he is a wise man, his wisdom leaves him. If he is a prophet, his prophecy leaves him. The life of the irate is not true life. Therefore, they have directed that one distance himself from anger and accustom himself not to feel any reaction, even to things which provoke anger. This is the good path.
Okay, so we've actually discussed this Rambam before. I just want to just highlight a couple elements here. Notice... Sarai, by the way, is viewed as a prophetess later on, okay? Notice, if he or she is a prophet, the prophecy leaves them. In other words, when a person becomes angry, if they're angry, if they're wise, your wisdom leaves you. If you're a prophet, your prophecy leaves you. What does that mean? If a person is a person who got a 1600 on their SAT and becomes angry, they become an idiot? Explain that, Sarah.
Well, I mean, anger as an emotion, right, becomes all-encompassing. It takes away the rationale that most people have when you become so, like, that feeling that you all of a sudden have inside that, like, you know, it's an irrational feeling, and all of a sudden everything that you normally could understand is, why am I doing this? This makes no sense. Why am I even saying these things? Happens to me with my husband. Quite often, but you just figure out, you know, it's once it passes, you realize that you've said things that are perhaps things that were not good things to say, but at that moment, all rationale kind of leaves you.
Exactly. When you are in order, you're literally, as you said, the anger, that emotion of anger completely consumes the person. And that emotional frame is so powerful, so enslaving, that no matter, all rational thoughts seem to go out the door. We've all seen people at a restaurant who go crazy on a waitress for bringing in the wrong dish, whatever it is, and like, dude, chill out. What's up going on there? They become nutty. Now, we've discussed on many classes about their different aspects of anger. So bring it to the practical, because I always like to have a practical conclusion to the class every single time. All of us have gotten angry at least one of these scenarios. How do you practically handle these tough situations? Number one, a frustrating call sent to a representative who kept you on the phone for an hour and did not even resolve your claim in the end. Who has had such a situation? You're like sitting there and you're just stuck endlessly on the phone. And they, well, I got to check it. Mr. Rosenthal, I got to check into that. And you just like are just like totally like by the end of it, you want to kill them. Thank you for your, they're always, and they're giving all this reading script to calm customer down. So obvious, like, I appreciate your patience. Just give one moment. I'll put you on. May I put you on a brief pause? No! No, you can help, but I want the answer. I want to fix it. Fix it. That's what you want. That's what you want to say. But they're always just, do you mind if I put you on a brief pause? You did. This is the seventh brief pause. I'm really sorry. Whatever. They're constantly apologizing, trying to reduce the possibility of anger flare-up, which is basically what happens to all their people.
Not if you call the government. Just by the way, like, when it comes to government employees, it's the opposite.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is. I'm sure you're going to get the very best of it. So how do you deal with this? Who can share some tips and techniques of not going nutty and getting all angry?
I have none.
Okay. All right. That's an honest answer.
I always remind myself. So out of the four options, A is probably the only one where I usually lose my cool. but the others are...
Sarah, don't skip. Don't skip. We're going to take them one at a time.
Okay.
All right. Suzanne, do you have a suggestion for everybody?
Yes. I have turned it around on them because I... just so I don't lose it, and I started asking them questions if they would be happy with the way they are handling the situation, if they would be okay with their response, and I just start grilling them with that, like, is that would that be satisfactory to you? Would you be okay? And it, like, kind of throws them off their script, and then it becomes kind of fun. But it's not. I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's because I like, what is the resolution here? We're not going to go in the circle. I recently had this when I moved with the cable company, and I kept throwing it back on them. Like, is that an okay answer for you? Would you be okay if you were getting this answer? And like, it was like, that's not in the script. It's not in the script. And I knew that if I just lost it on them, I really wouldn't get anywhere. So I just started asking them how they would
right.
be.
That's good. What else? What else do people got? So that's a being causing a disruption of the entire their scripted flow, and therefore hopefully that will get a better resolution. What other? Elise, do you have a suggestion, Elise?
I don't know if I really have a suggestion. I mean, similar, I think I've really only encountered the first one. But I think I try to look at it like, you know, getting upset over this isn't going to solve the problem.
Right.
Not going to benefit me in any way to get upset about this. When I used to work for the New York City Public Schools, this used to happen all the time with human resources. So I had a lot of this, where they just transfer you to another person and nobody wants to help you. But it was very, very frustrating, but I kind of looked at it like, this is what it is, and I can get upset about it, but it's not going to make the situation any better.
Right.
And I don't know. I could probably use some suggestions for when this happens.
Okay. So, I mean, look, obviously the obvious thing, you know, try to, if you see that it's not going to work out, try to escalate it up to their, may I speak to your supervisor? You know, you'll do all the obvious things. Try to get somebody who has more power. But I think the only thing you can really say is that, like, in hours like this, yes, they're wasting an hour of my day. And I came to them with a problem and they can't help me. And I said, look, but the bottom line is, but why should I get, in addition to losing an hour, and in addition to not getting my claim or issue resolved, cable company, Verizon, you know, governmental agency, DMV, whatever it may be, fill in the blank, why should I now self-punish myself by choosing to be upset about this? It'll just add, I'll now have three negatives. I lost the hour, I didn't solve the problem, and now I'm all crazy. So I said, look, I'm not gonna be crazy. Look, that's it. I'm just, I can't. As long as I acted properly, and that's it. Just, what can I do? It's frustrating, and the nature of life is frequently frustrating. So,
I actually do have a tip.
Good. Adrian, good.
A Scott Shapiro.
Which would be
to be grateful that they're putting in the time. And reinforce like positive behavior. Be like, it seems like you're really trying hard. I want you to know that I appreciate it. And in so doing, enforce a positive mindset. Like I see you're working hard on this. Thank you.
So by the way, that as a motivating strategy, I think that'll probably be successful. I do try to do that, but there will be a time where you had say, you know, where you did and they didn't and they couldn't deliver. There is a point where I'm sorry, sir, we just can't help you. Is there anything else? Then they have that infuriating question of, is there anything else?
Anything else they can do?
Anything else they do? No.
Then I say like, I'm gonna sue you.
Right.
Connect me with the legal department.
Right.
But I will say,
that's the next step.
We Albert Ellis uses the term awfulize. We awfulize. We get very dramatic in how we think about things. Like being on the phone is the worst thing in the world. It's awful. I can't stand it. And then when we reframe it, like, all right, this is super annoying and super inconvenient. It is not the worst thing in the world.
Correct.
Right. So, like, that's what I would have for the others as well, although I hate the phone deeply, so that's why it annoys me. But my whole thing is usually even, like, you know, the waiter who spills food on you, getting mad at them and having them lose their job by screaming at their manager, how is that going to help anyone in this situation, right?
Correct.
Same thing with, like, cleaning lady. Trust me, it happens a lot. And the dry cleaner also, like, you know, trying to explain so it doesn't happen again will hopefully get you somewhere, but getting mad about it at the time is not going to really make anything better for anyone else.
Correct. In other words, because anger is about the childish belief that I want the world to be as I imagine it, that I go into a restaurant and food is never spilled on anyone. That's not true. I want to be in a world where the cleaning lady always does everything perfectly and makes no mistakes. That doesn't exist.
It's setting the bar a little too high and then being shocked when it doesn't live up to it.
Right. By the way, in life, that's a general good. That's a good life strategy.
Keep the bar low.
Keep your expectations low. If you make those expectations high, this is going to be the date of the century. It's going to be the most amazing restaurant experience. I'm going to be so happy seeing the house cleaned by the cleaning lady. The dry cleaner is going to do an amazing job. No. Not just say, no, it'll be okay. And then every time, if it becomes better than that, you're happy. But I think what Suzanne brought up is another piece of practical wisdom, is that part of the, the childish belief that I want the world to be as it is, there a consequence of that, and therefore when it doesn't work out, it's like awful, it's terrible. How could this possibly be? But reality is, we know that, look, when people come to us with problems, can we solve everybody's problems? No, we cannot. So this person in a call center in Bangalore, why do you think that they will be able to necessarily solve all the problems? Maybe they can only solve 70% of the problems, you know what I mean? And you're not one of those.
Okay. I mean, going to the restaurant with my brother is a deeply disturbing experience in general due to the fact that this happens every time.
He's like a magnet for food? He's like a food magnet? Like, people will just jump?
No. But meaning, like, he always expects the food to come out a certain way, for the waiter to do a certain thing. He expects a certain level of everything, and inevitably it doesn't live up to it. And therefore, he gets angry about it every time.
Right.
So it's just kind of on repeat.
Right. So that which now is very uncomfortable to be. It's always very uncomfortable to be with that person who's like the super particular restaurant guy, because they're going to make an issue about everything, and then it becomes like it's uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to be part of the conflict. Like, okay, it wasn't medium rare enough. It was slightly not medium rare enough, whatever it was.
Well, for Balchuvas, having their lovely non-kosher-keeping family go to a Jewish restaurant is always a lovely experience of, you know, not having a high bar set.
Okay, so right, so that you gotta prepare them that it's just not. I mean, except for the few high-end kosher restaurants that can compete on that level, which are about four.
I actually have only found one, but I'm glad that you found four.
And not every night. All right, guys, we're on the OT here. Sorry about that. Covering a lot of territory, but I hope you enjoyed that, and I'll see some of you guys tomorrow night. Have a great night.
Thanks.
Good luck. Thanks, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.